We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Alamite. This is Lore Keepers, the boundless venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus, wherein the richest tapestry of lore and
world-renowned
into being before your very ear holes. I'm Carter,
and I'm talking over Carter,
and that's Frank. And whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes, burn steel to usurp the Carrion Throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to kick flip. Sit a while by our fire, ho ho ho, weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale.
A is tale that how that's pronounced?
Old as time.
Is it okay? Where are Grey Wardens from?
Dragon Age.
Okay, that's what it was. I was like, that's not our wardens, right? We have the Wardens of Will.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa. Wowza.
Whoa. Wardens of Will. Whoa. W-O-W. That's how you pronounce that.
This half Fortnite, we're talking about sea monsters. But before we get into that, Frank, how you doing?
Man, I am looking forward to getting into that because I don't know what a sea monster is. Are they related to sea monsters?
Yeah, they're cousins.
Okay.
Cousins. Like you know how
they're sea cousins.
You know how Dratini is related to Dragonair?
Yeah, by direct line of evolution, not because they're cousins.
It's exactly the same.
Okay, do sea monsters transform into sea monsters? Do they evolve?
No, vice versa.
Sea monsters are the unevolved form, and then sea monsters.
Yes.
What? So then, is it sea monster right? Is that the is that the most evolved form?
Yeah, it's sea monsterini, and it turns into sea monsterite.
Okay. I'm doing good. I just forgot that Dratini and is it Dragonair? They're both just like snakes, right?
Yeah, they're weird water snakes.
And one of the snakes has like Pegasus wings on its head.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, cool. Good. Great. Just confirming here. Thanks, Pokemon for that very good content.
There's even better content if we dive into what a Pegasus is.
Guess. Instead of that, though, I would just say I'm doing pretty good. I beat Celeste a couple days ago, and I'm going through there's like an epilogue, kind of, and then there's like a bonus chapter, and then after that they added some DLC, so I'm going through that too. But there's also a lot more that I haven't touched, which kind of spoilers for Celeste, heads up. So if you don't want to hear that, like skip forward, I don't know, like 45 seconds or something. Like there's B-sides, like additional levels that you can unlock with like remixed music, and the entire level is like a remixed
version. That's a spoiler?
Version. Well, because the game is largely driven by discovery and like finding all these hidden stuff. And so if you don't know that they exist, you're not looking for them. But the game like rewards exploration. I don't know. You haven't touched Celeste, have you?
I haven't. I think I own it, so maybe I should.
I would encourage it. I think it's an incredibly good game. It has a very, I think, pretty powerful story, which you wouldn't really think that there would be much of a story there, but it's actually a very good character arc, and I find it very relatable. And for me personally, it's like on the level of there's shit that game does that is on the level of some of the best moments in Journey, which is not something I ever thought I would say about a game like Celeste. But it's just it's extremely tight. It's as far as platforming is concerned. It's very rewarding. It's encouraging. It's not shaming you, even though it is massacre. It's a good game. I really, really like it. And right now I'm kind of just trying to decide, like, do I continue with it or do I... The disparity between, like, beating the game, which is only, like, 8 hours, and getting, like, the completionist content, which is kind of why you would play the game in the first place, is, like, 35 hours. And so I'm like, how much time do I put into, like, doing the B-sides? This is me kind of trying to decide, like, when am I actually feel like I got what I wanted out of the game? And I think I might approach it the same way that I approached Thumper after I beat Thumper, which is, I think I've told you about that game before. It's the rhythm violence game where you're a beetle that's riding down a highway.
Yes.
In like a weird eldritch glitzy hell. It's pretty great. Yeah, if that's like, what the fuck is Frank talking about? Yeah, go check out Thumper. It's a very good game. But like, there's a lot of like bonus content that I will occasionally come back to. And I think it might be nice to have like a back pocket Celeste level to be like, oh, you know, I haven't beaten this one. It'd be great to just kind of come back and try and just get a couple screens forward every so often.
See, Frank, I've been playing Persona 5.
Shit.
Yeah, I played it a while ago and I got like 30 hours in. I've added another 10
hours. So less than halfway.
Yeah, I'm 40 hours in now.
Uh-huh.
I've got my waifu, and I've taken a little break to make sure it doesn't get stale, and I'm playing Control.
See, now both of those games, I was musing about Persona 5 should I? Dare I?
You don't have the time.
I don't have the time.
You don't have the time.
Yeah, I think I'm focusing on little wins more right now. What about Control? That is something I also, especially because it'd be a great flex of my graphics card, and I wouldn't mind trying out the DLSS.
It's good. I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's, I mean, very, it's, do you know,
it's like, as somebody who never watched Twin Peaks or X-Files or anything like that, I know I still would love that shit, because, I mean, come on, that's like a half of this podcast is like, what is free will and how does that manifest as some sort of weird tulpa or some shit, you know?
Do you know SPC?
Is it SPC or SCP?
SCP.
I do know what you're talking about, yeah.
SCP.
That's a world-building resource that we should be referencing.
It's very SCP.
Okay. Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's like this website where people are doing this like collaborative... I mean, it's like declassified files, quote unquote, of just like weird things that happen in the world. And it kind of works like a wiki, and people just fill out entries for just weird shit. It's really cool.
So here, Frank, I'll give you an example. I just ran past a guy while I'm on a quest in the Panopticon. And okay. the guy's standing, or he's sitting down with his back against some glass, looking at a fridge. And he's like, hello, is anyone there? And I can't see his face because he's back against the glass. And I'm like, what's up? What are you doing? He's like, I have to keep looking at this fridge. If I don't, it will deviate. And my the person that's supposed to take over my shift hasn't arrived. What's going on? I can't keep looking at it.
God, that sounds so great. It's like a weeping angel, but it's a refrigerator.
Yeah, it's just a refrigerator just sitting on this like plinth, and I'm like, look, I can't help you right now, but
that's hilarious.
He's like, don't forget about me, I can't keep doing this.
That's so fucking good. I love shit like that.
I thought you might. And that's just an example.
Fuck, that's
of,
very
like,
fun.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it so far.
I mean, we should probably start the episode soon, but what I was going to say was, like, I am currently trying to decide what the next game is that I want to get into. I'm kind of feeling like I want to try playing Torment Tides of Numenera, because...
You like Numenera.
I do. I mean, I like Numenera, but what I've heard about this game that it does well is it is just nonstop cool ideas of, like, world-building shit. And the downside is apparently that none of this stuff ever really adds together. Like, it never really... coalesces into one interesting whole, but that's just our fucking show, baby. Like that's what we do every day. You know, like there's a because it's the people who made Planescape Torment, and it's supposed to be like a spiritual successor of like a lot of the same people who made it. And Planescape Torment also has like a lot of stories that are associated, but they actually kind of coalesce in the end, and there's like a reveal. I don't know if you've played Planescape. That's an old. Wait for it to probably get remastered, or don't, because it's just legitimately incredible, and you would totally love it, dude.
All right.
Unfortunately, I already know the spoiler, but it's okay. I'd still probably enjoy playing the game. But yeah, as far as Tides of Numenera goes, like, it's like, it could be really fun, but it is like also like a 40 to 50 hour campaign, and I'm like, am I ready for another one of those? Maybe. You know, I mean, Watch Dogs was like, I probably put 50 hours into that. Works a lot better when you just have the one game that you're playing.
Yeah, I would say that if you do want to dive in control as a last word, combat is mm-hmm. is hard, but fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the there is a lot of reading. Like, there's a lot of stuff you pick up that give you lore. Okay. And if you don't want to fucking read a book, that's not going to be fun.
I mean, I think I do want to play a third-person action game next. I played some, Link Between Worlds. I played some Watch Dogs 2. I played Celeste. I've played, what's the other one? Obviously, Ocarina of Time. I've been enjoying there's a lot of open world games that I want to get into. And I know Control isn't exactly open world, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
there's so many of those, like, you get your quests and your main story and
you have a surprising amount of freedom. Shit.
Yeah, exactly. Any game like that. And I'm like, I don't think I'm ready to play an Assassin's Creed yet. I feel like maybe I'll play Mankind Divided.
Yeah, maybe.
I've kind of been the way that sex. I've. Yep. Day. I had a roommate in college who thought that it was called Day of Sex. I was playing Human Revolution. So I was playing a game. He thought I was playing a game of Day of Sex, Human Revolution. And it was something that. He didn't comment about, but he was not happy about. We're both very Christian at the time, and so he thought, so every time I was playing this game called Day of Sex, he just was like quietly, upsetly doing his engineering homework in the other desk in the dorm. And anyways, yeah. So I'm like, but maybe I'll play Mankind Divided. I'm trying to decide whether I want to start the game over again or not, because I was pretty far in.
Yeah,
I have been enjoying playing games from the top. I don't know.
I hate when you played through a game like 70%, but then you got tired of it, and then you come back and you're like, I don't remember fucking anything. I don't remember how to play.
Yeah. And it's not just the having to start over again, like trying to remember skills and things, but it's also like, I'm out of this story.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the story beats and things don't matter that much to me anymore. I'm like, do I really want to go through and play all this again? Because I played that game pretty exhausted. I think I already put like 25 hours into it, you know? And I think it's probably like a 40-hour campaign. Like, do I really want to do that all over again? Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Well, anyways, that's for future Frank to figure out. Maybe later today. Who knows? But, you know, it's one of those monstrous things about life. You know, choice. Choice is a monster.
Yep, and like some monsters, it is in the sea. The sea of thoughts. But some monsters are in the literal sea.
I don't think I've ever just abandoned you. Like, we're co-pilots flying the same plane, and I was just like, well, and I just opened the door and leaped out. Just like, you're gonna land this one now.
Yep.
Fuck. Holy shit. Yeah, so this week we're talking about sea monsters. Oh, shit. Okay.
So, what are some classic sea monsters you think we should see in the Marian Ocean?
Yeah,
I've got some easy, quick ones, as I'm sure you do, but, you know. Right, let's get some names on the board.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking of, like, how do we approach this? What did we want to even do with sea monsters? Well, for starters, I think it's a great topic because we haven't really talked about it yet. We know that there obviously are. We can decide to, like, what extent and stuff, you know, how present are they? They're definitely present, but, like, how big of an impact on people's lives are they making? Especially, like, you know, with keeping a focus on Parasari, we can kind of talk about, like, a general broad sweeps for the whole of the Marian Ocean, but also, like, what do the Parasarians do about them? Do they do anything? Do they need to worry about sea monsters? If not, why? And like, yeah, what kind of sea monsters are we talking? I mean, I think...
So I think...
Oh, go ahead.
So quickly, I can say about Parasati, I do not think they need to worry about sea monsters. And the reason why is this shelf they're on. It's very shallow compared to the rest of the ocean.
Okay, so you're associating sea monsters specifically with depth. You don't think that there's going to be any sea monsters that are in shallower waters?
I think there are going to be some, you know, predators, like maybe very large sharks or colossal, maybe like, you know, larger squids. But I don't think there's going to be Kraken.
Like weird ones. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think it's going to be massive. And when I mean sea monster, I mean a monstrosity of giant proportion.
Okay. Hold on. I'm just literally adding environment, coastal and underwater to 5e tools just to see what it comes up with.
Because don't forget we have spans.
Yeah, and that was actually where I was going to go with it. Is I was like, I think the moment that you started talking about, like, because there's a shelf, I think you're right to some level. Like, there is a limit to the kind of monster that you would or wouldn't see because of the shelf. However, there is a lot of, like, submerged valleys and things in between the collapsed buildings or the buildings of this once, like, you know, once Avon Prima city that was there. And I'm like, I think there could be some stuff lurking. It's just maybe not some massive creatures.
I think there's some weird shit. There might be like giant purple, you know, octopi that shoot lasers, but
sure. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right that there is this, because it's on a shelf, there's going to be less of that. However, I will say that with what you're pointing out with spans, I think that spans are oftentimes as much of a reason for the danger as depth, because they kind of work like Bermuda triangles. You know, you like just get lost into them and then you don't show back up.
Yeah, I think that maybe when plying the seas, a lot of captains will have dimensional indicators or something like this, like tied to the harmonic frequency of the plane of water.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah, that will chime if they, you know, are on that plane, and then they're like, "Oh shit, we're in a span." You know, everyone, you know, we need to do certain things to get out of this.
That's a really interesting idea. The idea that there is these like harmonic resonators, which is such a nerdy thing to say, but I get what you're saying. It's like the harmony of the frequencies of the plane and what plane is it resonating in vibrancy to. I had never even considered that before, but it would, of course, you would need captains who have that because spans aren't always static in their location. They do, their borders do shift, and I could totally see we can't start talking about spans for this entire episode, so I won't take us down that path, but I can definitely see some brave captains or clever captains trying to like take shortcuts through spans, like just like cut a tip of it off and like save a ton of time, because sometimes they can work like that. It's sort of like a slip space, you know. But yeah, I definitely, it would serve as a breeding grounds or at least a gateway from the, you know, plane of water to providing so many different like magical creatures.
Yeah.
Which I do think that a lot of them are magical, not just animatic. Obviously, you know, any elementals, you know, from the elemental plane of water are pretty much just anima, because I don't think that magic even exists. Maybe it's sort of like a two-way gateway. A span, because on the one hand, you do have the elemental plane of water seeping through, but maybe the similar happens the other way. And so around these like doorways of, you know, these like planar doorways, you might have some whims of nine flow that do seep a little bit into these pockets, these not quite isolated, but they work like an eddy where, you know, sort of it disperses, but it's concentrated at the span.
And the plane of water might be slightly different from the other ones because of water.
Right, because of the nature of water and because this like slowly, ooh, one day we should talk about this. I bet there are elemental lords of the water plane who see this as like an invasion or like a plague of some kind, like a magical plague, because it would inherently affect every elemental,
mm-hmm.
Which is where I was going with this, is I think that a lot of sea monsters are maybe created from the fusion of animatic powers and energies with magical sentiments.
When a squid and an elemental have a baby, it's a kraken.
Right. Sure. That I'm actually kind of not exactly that, but the spirit of the idea actually totally tracks with me. Because there is also another big one that we got to talk about, which is aberrations. What is the role of aberrations in this ocean? Because as we've established in the past, and you can check the podcast for reference here, the Fenislil, the ocean, the landlocked ocean of Undara, the western supercontinent, that's got like a moon crater in the middle of it from Fenislil, the old moon, that has like crashed into it and like created a cratered seepage, right? There's like a place in the extremely deep depths where aberrations can come through. It's not the only place that aberrations can come through from the Howling Void, which is, man, it's been a while since we name dropped that one.
Yeah,
my question is, go ahead.
The reason why is because that's where the Nameless One was exiled.
Right, exactly. And so like it basically left like a searing, a scar on reality there specifically.
It's like a singularity. He got the Nameless One got like stuffed it out through a hole in space time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Got kicked out the door. My question is what about in the Marian Ocean?
I don't think
there's aberrations traveling all the way from over there, or they're just maybe there are some, but it's a lot less likely.
I think
it's as likely as okay.
There are some, but
I like
it's just
that.
Like
I think
not
that that's
a big problem.
I think that that's more interesting to me. Like, Fenislil is this, like, weirdly eldritch-haunted ocean. It's got, like, weird ghost activity.
Water.
It's fresh water, which is, like, also
it's
completely
weird.
Different. It's a very supernatural
Absolutely.
Body of water, whereas Marian Ocean is more mythical, maybe?
Yes.
Is, absolutely. Like, a way of talking about it. The monsters that you see there are less, like, cosmic horrors and more just, like, beasts unbound by typical constraints, you know, and
I'm
magically infused.
Like giant whales the size of, you know, ocean lions.
Islands? Yeah.
I'm thinking like, you know how they're...
Turtle islands. You got to have those giant
dragon turtles.
Ass, like,
yeah.
Yeah, dragon turtles where like an island is built on top of it.
Yeah, and I'm picturing like, think narwhal and like a super massive whale. So it's got like a huge horn.
Okay, sure. Like a ship, we call it a shipbreaker or something. Shipbreaker
yeah, something
whale.
Like that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at like there's a Leviathan, which is literally just a water elemental. It's basically just a sentient storm.
There's the Kraken, which is classic.
Mm-hmm. You got Merids, which are those like elementals. So okay, question then. Do we want to do a thing where elementals, specifically water elementals, are more present in the Marian Ocean than they are in Fenislil? Like maybe this seepage, I don't know if it happens more, but like for whatever reason, they're more active. And as a result, like, you know, there could be some intent behind the releasing of some of these monsters. Nah, I don't know if I am in love with that. Maybe occasionally there are elemental lords that like it's like, you know, releasing your hounds,
mm-hmm.
you know, pursue things in the Marian Ocean. They occasionally appear and like and avail themselves. But maybe it's not all the time.
Yeah. And I think that there are some like some creatures that aren't predators, but are still like huge because of spans and all this stuff. Like I'm thinking of like. Tuna the size of like a skyscraper, just like a massive tuna fish, just like
yeah. You're just talking about like sheer scale.
Yeah, because it's huge and spans make things bigger in my mind because they just have so much more space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you're right. Especially because you can have. Okay. Idea. We know that magic can affect the evolution of a creature. Especially as it lives in the ocean. We've talked about this actually last episode, that magic's relationship with water, while it's still pretty ill-defined, there is like an association. I could totally see it getting stuck in these
spans and like the magic flows in, but it has trouble seeping out, and it creates these sort of semi-chaotic eddies and things that build up and become almost like a backwater because they're stuck in this, you know, this sack. And any of the creatures that get stuck in there continue to just sort of like are get flush with this magical power that can change, yeah, size, can sort of morph their shape, can give them a sentience. You know, you can get all sorts of weird, and I think it does it uniquely each time. Not to say that there aren't like sometimes an entire school of fish that gets trapped and becomes like a Transformer or a Megatron or whatever, you know, where it's like, you know, all the fish work together as one body in a more literal way. But also, I think people see these smaller spans rise up occasionally, these more like they're like spots that appear in the ocean where it's like, this wasn't here 2 weeks ago and it might not be here in 2 months, but it's almost like gestating a weird creature. Anything that gets caught in that, when the span pops, it's like pops like a bubble. All of a sudden, there's like this crazy monster that is on the loose.
So I sent you some images, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta. Where's my Discord? Discord, where are you? There you are. Whoa.
Yeah, the first one is an artist's depiction of Charybdis from ancient Greek myth, which is like this weird monster that makes whirlpools and it has this like gaping maw and it eats ships.
Okay, nice. Is this other one the coelacanth?
The coelacanth.
Coelacanth? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm imagining like giant bony fish because, you know, most fish aren't bony. But this movie
is the coelacanth is bony? I didn't know that.
Yep. It's the only bony fish left.
I caught a coelacanth in Animal Crossing in New Horizons. That was the first time I've ever caught one.
Really?
It was crazy. Yeah. It's just like, because they can be caught at any time of the year, it's just extremely unlikely. Somehow I caught one.
Well, it's like a shiny in Pokemon. You get yourself a shiny coelacanth.
Kind of. I mean, dude, I've been playing Animal Crossing since 2003 or something, and this was the first time I ever caught one. Anyways, yeah. Coelacanth are weird, man.
Yeah, they're, you know, most of their relatives are extinct.
Do we have anything like that?
And what do you mean?
Okay, so obviously, the way that the creation story works, as far as like what's been recorded, a lot of the Knowing Sea history is sort of having begun when the Knowing sort of stepped out of the doorway of the Ethereum. You know, when free will was finalized, and like after all of the work that Owen put into the giants, finally created, you know, the first knowing creatures. But in truth, we know that like reality existed for a long time before that. And my question is did evolution work similarly to the way that it did on like on our world, where like life started in the oceans and stuff? We could say it was magically assisted.
Yeah, that sounds like the closest thing. Because we want to go with, you know, the idea that humans are created, right?
Right. Right. Well, and also magic, maybe not even magically assisted, magically reliant. Like, if magic was a part of your ecosystem, then it would just be something you take in the same way that you take in, you know, water or air or whatever. And I think that, you know, this is starting to go down some weird rabbit holes we'll have to come back to one day. But I think... like it almost needs to be treated as a, like an essence of life in the same way chemicals are, you know, certain chemicals that creatures rely on. Where I was going with this was just like, did we have stuff that was existing in the oceans long before people ever showed up? Are we talking on the order of millions of years, or maybe this is only thousands of years or something? You know, was this like an accelerated evolution? Do we have artifacts from a like before humanity was ever around, or other, you know, other knowing, you know, ancestries? Yeah, that's basically what I'm wondering, is do we have these like creatures that are like coelacanths?
We have giants.
We do have giants. I mean, so there definitely was life. I mean,
we have Dino Giant Island. So I think probably we probably have cyanobacteria.
Well, and also maybe there was with your mention of dinosaurs, like plesiosaurs and shit, you know, like water reptilian creatures that just haven't really left. Maybe they stick to the edges of a rune, but they definitely
Yeah, you get some Nessies in there. Shit. Okay, so I feel like we've done a pretty good job of kind of describing like some of the monsters and at least laying some foundations for what they could be. How are people interacting with it? Like, my first thought goes to like some sort of sea monster hunting, like monster hunters who, you know, have these massive warfaring ships that are then contracted to go out and, you know, deal with people's monsters.
Yeah, I like the idea of hunter ships. And I think that might be the most interaction that Padasadi gets with them. Maybe hosting some monster ships or, you know, and so there's some maybe sea monster hunting companies based in Padasadi.
I like that they're literally just, let's just call them monster ships. That's awesome.
Yes. And then
they're decorated in the same way that a monster hunter hunter would also be decorated, in that like you see the like sort of the spoils of their victories, because, you know, the more elaborate that stuff is, the more from just looking at a ship be like, oh, this is a real one. They fucking know what they're doing.
They might have one of those like whale tusks or whale horns on the front of the ship.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they would probably appropriate the I mean, it's like weird, like literally like nautical monster hunter where they're like, oh, so these billowy sacks that come from, I don't know, some sort of floating jellyfish monster work for electrifying water in a nearby range. And so then, like, as they get close to a creature, you know, they're using the parts that they acquire. That's fun.
I'm interested in how the deep dwellers deal with them, the mer people.
Yeah.
Because it seems like, yes, they would definitely be under siege.
I mean, I think there's maybe like a, just because I'm doing Borderlands and, or not Borderlands, because I'm doing Wheel of Time right now, the Borderland houses, I forget, like Lord Agelmar and his, and all of his shit, like maybe they have lives that are kind of like that, where they have this huge metropolis, but everyone is always ready to fight because sometimes shit just wanders into their fucking trench, you know?
Yeah, I think they might have like a lot of use of like sonar or, like, mm-hmm, you know, weird vibration shit to maybe like make it unpleasant for things to be nearer.
Okay, wait, here's an idea. Do they have guardians? Some sort of like, do they have their own sea monsters?
They release the Kraken.
Have been bequeathed to them from either like a merfolk god or, you know, part of some legend or something that they like harnessed and domesticated and turned into like, you know, fight monsters with monsters, and you get some kaiju action going.
I see.
You know, some like slumbering crustaceans that just hang out in certain parts of the metropolis. And then when like they get under siege, you know, somebody awakens it with the call of a horn or something. And then the thing just, let them fight.
Maybe we take an example from ancient Greek myth and we bring back the Hecatonchires.
That sounds familiar. That's not associated with Hecaton, is it?
Oh, I mean, what is Hecaton to you? It just means 100 in Greek.
Oh, okay. Hecaton is, I think it's King Hecaton in Storm King's Thunder, right?
Okay, I don't know. But H-E-C-A-T-O-N is Hecaton.
Okay.
And then, so Hecaton, which is really more like Hecaton. It's not a huh, it's a he. It's aspirated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Kyrie, you might know Kyrie from Chiral, because Chiral's from Kyrie.
Chiral, I don't remember what that word
means. It means hand-like. Chiral symmetry.
So okay.
Hecaton Kyrie means hundred-handed ones.
Oh, I know about the hundred-handed one.
You know about the hundred-handed ones. There's many of them.
Okay, I just know about the card from Magic the Gathering. Okay.
But that's, yeah, the Hecaton.
But what are they? Are they monsters?
Yeah, they're monsters that helped the Greek pantheon of the Olympians defeat the Titans.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they were imprisoned in Tartarus because they're weird.
Because they have 100 hands.
Yeah. But I was thinking of like, you know, like a giant crab monster with like hundreds of claws. Or like
you could definitely do that.
Like an uber lobster. You know how the lobsters have all the legs, but just mm-hmm. have it all have claws, and then
it's just all claws all the way down, baby.
Exactly.
You get like a weird eel lobster monster where it's like an extremely long lobster or something,
and it's armored.
I mean,
are these the primordials or something?
Oh, I don't know. Are we doing like, is there an addendum to the fair, to our, what is it, the alluvium, where there's the 100 clawed lobster?
Well, no, I mean, because this would actually, I think this would come from primordium.
I see, but the anima.
Okay.
Is there an animated lobster?
I don't, wait, why would, what do you mean animated?
By anima, and not by magic.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. Is, well, first of all, all lobsters would be animatic by nature because, like, living creatures have anima in them.
But a pure anima lobster.
This is kind of what I'm wondering is I kept on thinking, like, how did they get these monsters? And I wanted to tie it to some sort of, significant event or something. And I'm like, what if this merfolk metropolis was able to flourish and like succeed because there was a time when they were, I don't know, making war with some elemental lords of like the plane of water or something, because there was a span and this war lasted for a long time. And then like there was an era where like the leaders actually were able to broker peace. And then as sort of like a gift to them, they gave them this weird primordial lobster eel or whatever the fuck we decide, 100-handed crab or, you know, 100-clawed crab. And then this becomes this like guardian that protects their city and they're allowed to flourish just because of it. But there's always a little bit of like tension and stress because anytime there's any animosity between, you know, the elementals and the merfolk, it endangers their entire culture.
Yes. And Frank, it's canon now. I've decided on my own, because you're going to love this idea. There's another city of mer people, of merfolk, that have a different patron than the 100-handed lobster, which is a giant manta ray upon which their city is built. And so they just fly around. It's like, woo.
I love it. They literally are like, they're travelers.
Yeah. It's like the flying continent, except it's a manta ray with a city on it.
And I think maybe very few people are actually like born there. Or there are like no quote unquote locals. Merfolk come from all over. You know, they're considered the wandering ones or something. You know, they don't fit in with everyone else, and so they find this sort of, you know, bohemia.
A merfolk Romani?
I guess kind of, but like more respected by others. Like it's something where I think the other merfolk are actually excited when they see them come, because it's like, share us with your news, or like, this is like this wondrous, incredible thing. And I mean, it'd be hard to say that there wouldn't be some like intrinsic mistrust of them because they are different. So yeah, maybe a little bit Romani vibes. Maybe not as hostile as the Romani, though, but there are some people who aren't trusting of them.
Hey.
Hi. God, I love AT&T. It's fine. This is the first time that's happened in a while, so I'm not too frustrated about it, all things considered. But it's like, come on. While we're recording, really? Oh, well. Internet went down for those of you who are, you know, who are listening. Doesn't look like it's great now either. Carter, can you hear me okay? Am I coming through?
Yeah, you're coming through clear.
Okay, your camera froze a few times there, but it looks like you're back to being smooth.
It was pretty perfect. Because you were like, you know, there'd be a little bit of mistrust, and you froze like that. And I'm like, Frank?
I mean, yeah, I think that there's just some, what we were saying about it, just like probably, yeah, just some mistrust of the people. We can't really avoid that.
We could flip that and say that they're like chosen by the gods or the whatever, and that those who, you know, adopt the manta ray are holy, and so they're actually,
I mean, I think those stories go around, yeah,
anyone else.
Mm-hmm. But again, like, you know, kind of the old thing that you said is it doesn't have to be utopic. You know, I have to, as much as I do want to provide a place where, you know, hate crimes don't exist, it's like, well, if this is sort of an exploration, yeah. If there are, that is just a hate crime. Ugh. If we are just talking about like people though and the human condition, and that's something we're actually exploring through, you know, fantasy tropes, like, it's just a part of existence. Maybe one day, you know, when we get to Star Trek land, maybe they won't have prejudice, but it's very clear that those people also clearly have prejudice. Holy shit. There's so many xenophobes in the world of Star Trek. It's just, they have extremely reductive, yeah, whatever.
As long as there's no human problems, right?
Right, yeah.
The Xenos. Yeah.
Yeah. We should tie all this back into Padasari, though.
Yes.
Because I like everything that we've done. I think that there's something about, I mean, maybe the Padasarians don't really care about sea monsters, A, because, yeah, they wouldn't show up a lot, and B, because even though it is a fairly large city of, I think we said somewhere around like 40 to 50,000 people, like this is a big ass, yeah, it's the most populated above water place in probably all of the Marine Dominion, or it's at least in the top like two or three. You know, like these merfolk have a city of like 350,000 or something below them. Like they're so much larger. And I think that if they have one or maybe even two of these guardians, it could be kind of cool to have like sort of, you know, two sort of legendary titanic creatures that protect the metropolis. Like, I don't think the Padasarians really have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
Although I do like the idea of treasure hunters having to deal with, on a much smaller scale,
the laser, you know, sort of
octopus. More like hand-to-hand combat, you know, the laser octopuses or whatever, you know, like, yeah, weird sharks or just like some sort of trilobite looking motherfucker that's like hanging out in a building and has been drawn, especially because they'd be drawn to the artifacts, you know, because of the magical energies. Any creature that got warped might actually be drawn to Padasari from a long ways away. Well, we could play with that. Don't necessarily have magical sonar or whatever, but they could.
Maybe there's like a known problem in the rune is like giant sea saltwater crocodiles.
I mean, why not? Like, yeah, hell, just, like, fantasy world. They could definitely have that. I mean, there definitely could be parts of where the treasure hunters are traveling, because as a reminder, treasure hunters, yes, many of them are diving directly from Padasari, but Padasari also works as a stationing ground where ships go to refuel and get more personnel or whatever when they're doing their hunting, their treasure hunting, and they're going to lots of other places in the oceans. Is there anything that would be inherently valuable about harvesting from spans? Like, could you harvest magical energy from a span or something weird? I just had an idea of like, what if there are people who are actually actively looking for the bubbles like of span, and they're going there to harvest some sort of resource. The thing that goes to mind is did you ever watch what is it called, Starlight or something? It's that movie, fuck, I don't remember. Whatever. There's lightning harvesters. They actively fly into lightning storms on an airship and then like harvest lightning using these very cool like webbed sort of fingers and then catch it in like bottles or these like canisters. I saw that episode of
The Witcher.
Oh, is that in The Witcher?
Yeah, they bottle lightning.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I don't remember what it's called. Whatever. Anyways, it's a guy from Daredevil back when he was younger.
I see. I thought I was going to go with the like capturing and trapping djinn route or whatever the water djinn are called.
There's maybe some of that. I don't know. I don't really like the idea of, I mean, we could do that because it probably does exist. I just don't want to focus on slavery.
I mean, is it slavery when they're animated? That's the question, Frank. That's the loophole.
Are you talking about like a merid or whatever?
Yeah, merid.
I think that like that their sentience should still be respected.
But they don't have souls, Frank. They're just animated. They're just like an AI. Does it have rights?
Yes.
There you go.
But sufficiently advanced androids should be recognized as having rights, well, because they're just another kind of living creature.
I know. I'm just saying that there are people that maybe in Halime that disagree with you.
Yes, I agree, I recognize that those people do exist. However, I think that they are like the equivalent of like slave drivers and only sell to like pretty fucking shitty people. So it's like, yeah, they do exist. What I was trying to get at though is that that's like the difference between like human trafficking in our world and like oil. They're both evil. Really, what I was talking about is the kind of industry that it is. One is like very much on the fringes of civilization, and another is something that people are deeply reliant on. Yes, arguments could be made that human trafficking is something that people are deeply reliant on, with child slavery and shit. I don't want to have that conversation today.
I don't either.
If you're all right with that. And we are getting a little long here. I think we should probably wrap up. But really what I was trying to get at is there anything that spans are offering with the unification or fusion or interaction between anima and magic?
Yes, we've talked about this before, Frank.
Oh, right. Shit, when people, monks, they have their like Zen mode. What, a ki, right?
Yeah.
They have, isn't that the confluence of anima and magic?
It is,
because only people, it is said at least that only like the knowing
it's
people who are able to possess both, yes, the power of the soul is able to manufacture ki. Can you remind me what the use of ki is? Is it like about shaping reality? Is that what we decided?
I think so.
Okay.
But because,
which makes sense, because it's like the pure creative power. It's like this is saying like this is what Own was like made the knowing for, was to shape reality.
But it's confined to the body because of how ki is created via the interaction between the soul and the body.
Right. And I think we talked about like there, it is theoretically possible for that stuff to exist outside of the body, but because the body works as an internal system for this, it can't extend beyond it.
Yeah,
or at least there's like extreme limits to that.
Yeah, you're reading the Wheel of Time. It's like the combination of Sidar and Sidon.
Oh, I was going to say it's more like the void and like embracing the void, but I see.
Yeah,
because is that known as the true power or the because there's like
no,
a third
the true
thing,
power
right?
Is the power from the dark one, you fucking
right.
Dark friend.
Right. Which is weird that you'd call it true power, but whatever.
Oh, that's what the evil ones call it, the Forsaken.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but yeah, so we should finish this episode. But like, what is? I mean, is this literally ki? Are they harvesting ki? And if so, how is this being created? Is it maybe more like a primordial state where it has yet to be assigned?
So we talked about this before. They're crystals.
An ability.
They're crystals, Frank.
Yes, we have talked about the crystals.
Yes, I believe that when magic is exposed to the animated reality of the elemental planes,
unconstrained or unanchored, we could say anima, in that it's not associated with a animatic creature.
This is how I imagine it, Frank. It's like how soap works. Do you know how soap works?
Are you talking about the phospholipid bilayer?
No, that's a cellular thing, not a soap thing.
Or no, you're talking about the fact that soap molecules bind to like molecules that we want to scrub off our hands,
yes.
And then those things no longer can like interact with the surfaces of our hands and stuff.
Yeah, so basically soap is special in that it has two things going for it. It has the molecule of soap is made with a long nonpolar tail. And then a polar head, similar to the phospholipid bilayer in cells.
Right.
And
it's a lipid.
So the long tail is attracted to other nonpolar molecules like dirt.
Okay.
And it forms around these things, so all of the polar heads are facing outward, which water can then bind to and wash away.
Okay.
Because water can't wash dirt away because it's nonpolar.
Right. And so you're saying a similar thing is happening with like the way that magic and anima are interacting here when it's unanchored?
Basically, the anima forms around the magic, encapsulating it into crystals.
Oh, wait, is that how crystals are made?
That's how certain magical crystals full of covered in anima are made. Maybe not all.
Fuck,
crystals.
No, you're totally right. I remember we talked about in Spans that like crystalline structures would show up a lot. And like one of the good examples was like in mountainous regions. And so these are like a sort of weird water crystal.
Yep. They may be like, maybe they look like ice.
Yeah, I was going to say they might look like ice crystals that don't melt in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like that. Bam. And they just kind of, they sit in these like large snowflake clusters, sort of just like in the water. And so people are they'll dive down, they like, you know, or like have these trawling nets where they're pulling up a bunch of them. But oftentimes they need to hire monster hunters because they're going into very dangerous spans to acquire this. But then there's, you know, lots of riches to be.
And you passed it by for because I just want to make sure you heard my portmanteau.
Did you say munters?
Yes, monster hunters.
Yeah, there's a reason why I passed by it.
Okay, good.
That's actually somebody's last name that I know.
Oh, Munter. Their last name is he a Munter. Monster hunter? Yeah.
Munter. No, I don't think so.
Okay, you should ask them.
Oh, should we do our one in one?
I think I just gave my one. That's the Munters.
Okay. I'm going to tie it back to Padasari with my one, which is, I think these crystals, I don't know, I would like to see the markets for this stuff in Padasari. I mean, like, clearly this is a place where lots of people from all over the local world, I imagine the Western Coast Lords, whatever the, you know, the kind of like Forgotten Realms-y thing that's happening on the eastern side of Katara, which is the western coasts of Meereen Dominion, are sending their people over. Yeah, I don't know. There's just like a lot of magic users are coming from all over the place to Padasari because it seems like it's this nexus point where a lot of this stuff is sold.
What if we call them like shore barons?
Coast barons, shore barons, the stone barons, the...
Stone? Where the fuck did that come from?
I'm just trying to think. What do you call those rocky outcroppings of stone that aren't proper like islands? No. I don't know. I mean, Shore Barons is pretty fun. That could be good. We should call it for now, though, I think, yeah?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for letting us be your escape, especially in recent weeks. If you forgot your worries and you want to make others forgetful, we're on every podcasting service known to humankind. This will remain true probably after the end of America. So don't be greedy. Share us with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing as hell? Of course we did. We talked about soap. But chances are that there's some context in the podcast description, so go there to learn more about soap. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at The Lore Keepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes.
And finally, I just want to give a big thanks to both Josh Silker and Sloppy Sam Kiss. Wade. Josh for Land of Heroes, Lore Keepers theme, and Sam for the podcast art.
Still yeah, loving thanks, guys. It.
It's so good. So good.
Until next time, don't forget, there are always more lobsters to boil?
Just more shores to barren?
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye, everyone.
You like some women dressed up as snakes, and you don't want anyone to know that. And that's okay.
Okay.
Is it your like scaly?
Like a naga?
No, a scaly.
Oh, okay.
We're going mean, to, could, I was thinking
you could
more
be
like,
into nagas if you're a scaly.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I was just confused.
This is more general, you know?
Yeah.
Not specifically nagas.
Yeah. No, but it was just, it's just like the weirdest thing where I had been having this problem for weeks and every thing that I had like looked into, there was no real explanation. Everything was just like, oh, just check your firewall or, you know, make sure that it's not being, you know, are you using port forwarding or whatever? I've never needed to use any of that from like my other stuff, but I set it up anyways. I mean, the firewall, obviously, but port forwarding has never been an issue for me. And then I finally... I found someone, it was like they kicked in the doors to a saloon and like walked in, spurs clinking. They're like, all right, here's the actual problem. Here's what's totally going on right now. I guarantee it. And they just like laid it out. They're like, you're going to go into terminal. You're going to enter these commands. You're going to test your ping against Google and then see like when it starts having packet loss. And then you're going to reduce that down to where it is allowed. And then you're going to add 28 bytes, or you're going to add 28 to that ping number because of the 28 bytes that are in an IP address and some other shit. And I was like, what the fuck? What is this? But it got set up, so now there's like maximal limits and packets aren't allowed over 1500 bytes. And obviously that shit gets bundled. I mean, like when we think of a packet, we're thinking of like the megabits per second that we see, but in truth it's, or megabytes per second actually, but in truth it's like like millions of tiny little packets that are being sent, like it's per signal basically. Every time you receive, like, you know, in the hertz refresh, that's a packet.
Yeah,
so it's how much data it's bundling into that. Yeah, it's like a tick. Ticks on a clock, or on a, like when you're clocking a PC is a different thing, but maybe that's also true for, I haven't gotten to networks yet. That could also be true for networks.
Networks are magic.
Networks are, dude, it's, yeah, I'm not going to get into it, but like, holy shit, it is
that's how much I've learned.
It feels like it. It feels like it's all just fucking science magic. Yeah, because
the Jedi send out packets from their fingertips.
And how complicated it is. Like, I was listening to Waypoint Radio this week, and one of the people started talking about networked area storage and their backup problem. And like, what they really need is just like basically a home side server that they can have everything back up into. And I was just like, I've never felt so seen.
You're just snapping your fingers like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I know all of this pain, all of the frustrations here. I am like slowly but surely learning so much about networks because I just have to, and it's annoying as shit.
You're going to invent IPv15 one day, Frank.
Ugh, no, I don't think. I hope to God that we never need more than IPv6. Like, isn't that supposed to allow for like literally like trillions of connections or something? It's something like insane. Yeah.
When you know, when Bill Gates gets all those chips and
5G towers. Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, the 5G towers connect to the chips.
Are you talking about the guitar pedal?
Yeah, I am.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you showed me. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my God, that's ridiculous. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm slightly concerned about one thing here. The audience won't see this, but it's like, I really like the cardigan. It's very nice, very comfortable, very warm. But the collar, mm-hmm. These things.
Yeah?
So they're nice little, you know.
Okay, if you're wondering, yeah, if you add two of them together, but that's true for a lot of shapes.
Yeah, I know. It's just, you know, it's on the collar. They're the right color.
Carter's worried because there's like it's like a Z. If the Z part was standing up, and he's worried because two of them combined make a swastika, and it's like,
no, I am not worried about that.
Oh, that's not what you're worried about?
No, I'm worried about, so have you never seen the uniform of a Nazi SS member?
No, maybe not. I mean, I have. I mean, but I guess I don't know what you're referring to. I guess I'm getting on Discord because I'm just assuming you're about to send me something.
Yeah, this is not a great thing to have on my Google history, but it's happened now. Here. And also not a great thing to send in Discord, but
you gonna join Telegraph or whatever it's called?
Signal?
Is it I thought it was Telegraph was like the one that they were all jumping ship to.
Maybe. I think that, you know, because Parlay's got dropped, but I think that I do have a Signal. I was informed to get it. There you go. So you see on the collar, you see that zigzag?
That doesn't look at all like what you've got.
It doesn't?
You're talking about the SS. You're literally saying the SS. Doesn't look like that.
Okay, good.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
Goodness,
it's just,
no.
It's just a little bit close for me.
So it keeps you on your toesies.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the swastika. I'm worried about the SS.
Okay.
Because that's a real worry nowadays, Frank.
I mean, yeah, it always has been, but these days, it's just like, yeah. Considering that a violent coup has, or a coup attempt has already been made, it is, wow, fuck 2020. I don't know if you saw this.
I saw an ad by Match.com for fuck 2020. That was hilarious.
Fuck 2021.
Okay.
Just like the fact that it's already just awful. I mean, like, what did we expect? It's not like, but
you know,
I think
things
was...
just don't get better magically when the year turns round.
I'm just going to show you these. So these three, first, so these are just some Lorekeeper tweets. The first is not terror or protesters. They're terrorists. Then the one directly above it is, my hottest take in all this is if you're white, you can't afford to look away, which is, you know, it's good. And then the third one here, tell me what that says.
I can't tell you what that says. It's so
is it really vague? Okay, it's
so
literally
blurry.
Just it's an automatic like it's a tweet bot that is called Year Progress, and it just tells you like every day what percent of the way you are through the year, and it just says Year Progress 1%, and there's like 10 empty bars. It's like so anyways, that's how I feel.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of throwing the year down the toilet just yet. Just because things started off on a bad thing doesn't mean it won't get better.
And then this is some sort of bird trying to eat a capybara whole.
I like capybara. They're the world's largest rodent, and they deserve every thing.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there, and it's getting its ass grabbed, and it doesn't care.
Because it's not working. It's just the bird's trying its darndest.
And that's even a tiny capybara. It's going after the easiest prey. And
yeah, it's just... What a dumb bird.
This bird looks sad.
It's just trying.
At least it figured it out.
Yeah, it kind of figured out its mistake. It's snowing here. That's nice.
Really? Yeah, it's...
Suppose I should save that hot content for the episode proper, huh?
Yeah, let me just look at the weather real quick.
What's the temperature there?
It is, you want it Celsius or Fahrenheit?
I would say, what do you fucking think? But I know that you'd give it to me then in Celsius out of some sort of weird Carter spite. So I'm going to say Fahrenheit.
41 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, that's actually pretty cold.
Yeah. It's winter. Winter is coming. Winter is here.
You probably need to wear a jacket when you go outside.
I mean, go outside, Frank. What?
Are you saying you don't go outside because it's cold or because it's 2021 and, you know, insane fucking...
I mean, here's three things for you, Frank.
Death virus is out there.
There's a pandemic going on. And in South Carolina isn't doing great right now.
Oh, is it bad?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad.
I guess I shouldn't even ask because it is in the South. And I just assume that if it's in the South, it's probably not doing as good as it could be.
Yeah, and then let's see. There is also the idea that it is currently Sunday, and the FBI have kind of said there is probably going to be some demonstrations going on Sunday in light of the inauguration. And I do live in a state capital, Frank.
Oh my god, dude!
So I mean, I could walk to.
Well, it is the Lord's Day, and you know these are some very devout believers in. What, yeah, fuck, dude.
So
sorry, that sucks.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe there's nothing going on right now. I don't know.
I mean, hopefully.
But the FBI has specifically said, you know, like, you know, they've heard chatter. It might be start today. And then it's also cold. So that's three things why I don't go outside.
And there's video games inside. Why go outside? There's video games in there.
It's true.
So here's something I can legally share. We got super high yesterday. That was fun.
Nice.
It's legal in Michigan. I don't know if you knew that. Recreational weed.
I think I remember hearing about it at some point.
Yeah, it was
edibles, dude, or smoking or
edibles. I think probably for just like the foreseeable future, if I do get high, it is not gonna be on actually like getting like smoking because of my whole chest issues.
Also, you know, it's just, I think it's just worse.
Yeah. Because, you know, yeah. If I can get the THC into my body, I don't have to do it the other ways.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it was actually, I think it was the first genuinely good high I've had in a long ass time and maybe ever. I don't know. It's like, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
We ended up just watching like a nature documentary and making mac and cheese and played some Gone Home, which was bizarre, but I think it was ultimately a good show. It was a good time. Yeah. We just
it was kind of sad.
It's melancholy.
Yeah.
It's a melancholy game. But that was a good time. We bought like a $35 chocolate bar that had 100 milligrams of THC in it. And so it's got like 20. Yeah, yeah. Well, because it's like 20 doses.
Yeah.
Of five apiece. The first time we did five, I got so fucking high. Like, because I have zero tolerance. And it was not great. It went from being a good high to a bad high. But this time was a lot more chill, because I reduced it from five to four. Because we tried 2.5, and 2.5 did fuck all. It did nothing. Like, an hour and a half in, I was just like, this is not doing anything. Okay, I'll do it, like, another 2.5. And again, just, like, there was just, like, this weird in and out. Whatever. We should probably just start the actual episode, though, huh?
Why, what are we doing?
So I actually, I was editing this morning. I came up with a few potentially good ones.
I think we decide. I'm kind of leaning toward vampires just because it's a fun pun. But
sure.
Or the, what do they call it? It's the thing that I do.
Oh, Badmanteau?
Yeah, Badmanteaus. Though I feel like Vampirate's a pretty good one.
Vampirate is not a Badmanteau. I would read, if I was in middle school and I saw the title of a novel be Vampirates in the school library, and it was just Vampirates with an exclamation point, I would totally pull that book out just to start finding out what... I mean, that sounds like some Terry Pratchett shit.
It does.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, definitely one of our flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool. I think this is an even number, which is, that means you launch us, right?
Probably.
Yeah, even is you.